to go back over qualities and the relationship between ideas of qualities of the two kinds. Actually, there are three kinds of qualities, but we only really need to focus on two. I'll tell you about the third in a minute. But the distinction between the two kinds of qualities is derived from a difference in the relationship between the ideas those qualities produce in us and those things in the object that exist and correspond to those qualities. And this is a little tricky because when you hear the word quality, you probably think of other words that in English mean the same, like attribute or property. Okay? But here I'm going to ask you to reserve the meaning of what Locke means by quality to what he says it means. And what he says is that... Is that as fuzzy as it seems? Let me just fix it so this side of the class doesn't feel like they're failing an eye test. Focus. That's not it. That is it. There we go. Was there an earthquake? How did that end up? Not our problem. He reserves the meaning of the concept of equality to, and here I'm quoting, that in an object, that power in an object to produce an effect in me. And this is obviously a very, very narrow conception of something about an object and as a cause and its effect, because it's only about those things in an object that can cause ideas in a creature capable of sensory perception, perceptual consciousness, like us. So a quality is more narrowly defined as the power in an object of perception to produce ideas of sensation in the human mind. Okay? And that's all they are. But now when I tell you how the two kinds of qualities differ, it's going to be a little confusing, because the idea of a primary quality resembles that thing in the object that causes it to arise in our minds. Whereas the idea of a secondary quality is an idea in my mind, a simple idea or complex idea of sensation, which doesn't resemble the thing in the object that causes it. Okay? So when you're thinking about this resemblance, I mean, obviously ideas aren't powers to produce ideas. So it's going to be a little tricky to navigate what exactly is meant here, and it's often hard to see. I'm going to reserve the word property to refer to the thing in the object that does or does not, is or is not represented correctly by the content of the sensations, right? What is contained in those ideas of sensation which we store in the mind, and which some of which resemble the thing in the object that caused them, the property in the object, which also acts as a quality, that is, has a power to produce sensations in our minds. And then those sensations in our minds that fail to represent or resemble that property in the object, which also happens to be a quality that is has the power to produce an effect in us. So, for example, the color red, this cap, that color, there's something in this object, let's call it a property, as I've tried to restrict the meaning of that word. There's a property in this object which my sensation, the idea that is caused by the quality in the object that produces the idea of red, does not resemble the property in this object that is causing me to have sensations of the red kind. Okay? So, is there anything confusing about this? Yes, there is? So what is confusing?
The property and the object that pertains to the idea are not the same as the property and the object that pertains to the power.
No, I'm saying that the power in the object to produce sensations in me is what Locke calls a quality. And the idea, the relationship between the idea and that feature of the object that causes that idea in me, he does not call a quality. That's a property of the object or an attribute of the object. Because the power is not also red, is not also the it's the cause of the red. What I'm trying to do is to get you to distinguish between, he narrowly defines a quality as just the power to produce effects in perceptual awareness for minds capable of perceptual awareness. Minds capable of vision, hearing, touch, taste, smell. Okay? He just, that is how he defines quality. So, if that's how he defines it, since the sensation of red doesn't represent a power of any kind, right? Even the shape of this chair, which Locke says is a primary quality of the chair. My idea of its shape resembles the thing in the object that actually exists and which has shape and also has the power to produce in me visual sensations that represent shape. Okay? So there's a resemblance between the idea and the thing in the object that causes the idea. But my idea of its shape is not the idea of a power to produce an idea of shape. You following me here? The idea of a power is different from the power in this object to produce visual sensations that have visual shape is not being represented by the shape any more than when the fire burns, you know, when the forest burns because somebody lit a match carelessly up on a campsite behind Green Mountain. We don't think that the effect, the burned down forest, is represented. It represents the match that started the forest fire, right? We make this distinction between effect and cause, right? And that's what's going on here. Qualities are causes. Ideas of sensation are effects. And those causes in the object that produce ideas in me, effects in me that resemble that thing in the object that caused them, is what he says counts, is the case only for primary qualities. And for all secondary qualities, there is a failure to match or a failure to resemble. Okay? The idea of red does not resemble what it is in this cap that's causing me to perceive red. And that's what I was trying to get at last time. Secondary qualities are all these qualities. We've talked about this before at the beginning of the semester when I was pointing out that mechanistic scientific explanations, which claim that only shape, geometric arrangements in space of bits of matter, things that take shape, plus forces causing matter to move or not to move, are the only properties that are relevant to explaining anything in the natural world. And that means that colors, flavors, tastes, smells, textures, right, all of that stuff, and pain, he's not here, are not useful for explaining anything because they aren't what's really out there. When I perceive colors or I taste sweet, you know, the lemon drop is not in itself sweet. Sweet is an effect in me of something, you know, we now think, chemicals that affect my tongue receptors that are capable of responding to things that have certain specific chemical properties. None of which, they only are sweet to me when my tongue touches them. But the thing in the lozenge is not itself sweet any more than H2O is thirst quenching. Thirst quenching is a subjective experience of being sated when you're thirsty. right? It's the removal of thirst. Is H2O, does it have the property to, it will cause me to not be thirsty. But that's not a property of the water itself. That's an effect it has on me. The water is neither thirsty nor hydrated. It's kind of weird to talk about that. Are you sort of seeing what I'm trying to get at? And last time, unfortunately, instead of taking something like color, which involves a fairly well understood, most of you have an idea of how color sensations arise through a complex of interacting factors, none of which are in themselves colorful. Photons vibrating at certain frequencies, full spectrum light existing, right? Surfaces that reflect light or absorb light, all of these things, plus the receptors in my eyes that respond to certain frequencies and don't to others, ignore some, or respond to some in one way, actually is the way it works, and respond in a different way to others, right? So all of that, none of that is colorful. And that's what I was trying to get at last time. But when we talk about pain, most people don't have a theory of how pain emerges out of something that is itself neither painful or not painful. It's just irrelevant, right? It has to do with the way certain kinds of nerve endings respond to pressure or to conditions at the nerve ending, right? Okay, so the point of all this is that I want you to understand what Locke thinks is a major accomplishment of his positive account of the source of all ideas. He thinks he's discovered a way to direct scientists toward those subjective properties of perceptual experience, of perceptual awareness, which of those ideas of sensation are going to be useful for explaining anything in the world, and those that will not be useful. And this is Locke trying to provide a tool for providing knowledge through perception of the way the world is, so that you can conduct an empirical science that fundamentally turns on evidence of the senses. Because remember, the empiricists reject the rationalist assumption that what we know best about the world we know through intellect alone, without anything drawn from sense perception. The empiricists take the opposite view, that in fact the intellect is powerless to add anything interesting to the way the world is. At best, it kind of abstracts from what we perceive to produce concepts which only have a descriptive power and can only refer truly to the way things are in the world, because in the end, those abstract ideas have their origins in the literal content of conscious sensation. They literally are derived from simple ideas of sensation, all of them. Any concepts we have which are not derived ultimately from originating simple ideas of sensation are actually ideas we cannot use to describe the world at all. So this theory about how all ideas that pertain to the domain of perception must have their origins in simple ideas of sensation actually restricts which kinds of concepts we can use when we're conducting natural science. And Locke thinks that he's discovered which of those concepts we can trust and which we cannot, and the distinction between ideas of secondary qualities and ideas of primary qualities is precisely made so that he can say any concepts you get from simple ideas that are ideas of secondary qualities are going to be useless for purposes of explaining anything in the world of our perceptions. You must rely only on ideas of primary qualities, and where you encounter an idea of a secondary quality, you need to be looking for a primary quality in the object, which would fall under one of the concepts that you got from those simple ideas of primary qualities that you originally acquired through, you know, your development, your experience. And it's only the concepts that are abstracted from simple ideas of primary qualities that are going to be of any use in the toolbox for scientific explanation. Okay? So it's meant to be sort of like
Descartes' own account of how we can study nature and discover what is true about nature. And his method involved chiefly an appeal to reasoning using innate ideas, but it also he did acknowledge there were some ideas you could not get without having sense perception. Although for him it seems that that was mostly knowing that things exist. Their existence cannot be evident, but everything about the chair that's relevant to the best understanding of its nature for Descartes is what I have already available to me with the idea of a three-dimensional object with a certain visual shape in this case. And because the visual shape seems to be persistent and to match an abstract idea that I can generate representing it with numbers, right, with lengths of lines and an abstract, geometric representation of that shape, that plus its impenetrability or its taking space plus being resistant to things passing through it, like my hand passes through air, comprise everything that's essential in that chair. And the only thing that sense perception is really doing for me, like when I see its shape, that's just a way and a less accurate way of representing what's really there. When I get my abstract idea of its shape, I'm getting closer to what it really is. The only thing that seeing it helps me with is know that something's out there and it exists with this shape, which is partly misleading. That's why he says that he knows the wax best by reasoning independent of experience. Because what we know best about the wax, we couldn't know through sense perception. Remember, because it's the fact that it can take infinitely many shapes is one of its essential characteristics. So Locke is trying to provide scientists with a similar tool, but his is based on something that's actually more familiar since the early modern period for most scientists. Most empirical scientists think that most of what we know about the world, we only know through what sense perception reveals to us. And what experiments based on hypotheses that try to account for what we perceive, which take certain things that are hidden from us to be this way rather than that way, and experiments that are designed to show us through perception, whether they are this way or that way, right? So at the beginning of the investigation into color perception, it seemed that the world was filled with colorful things, and we went looking for, before Locke, we went looking, I'm being a little bit facetious, Locke isn't the only one who had this view, but Locke really brings it home as a fundamental principle of knowledge. If we want to know about color, we're going to have to look for something that isn't colorful. But there was a time when people thought that colors were real properties of material objects as perceived. And we went looking for the little bits of green, the little bits of chartreuse, the little bits of red, right? The red matter that makes or the gray matter and the black matter and the white matter, which makes this check shirt look the way it does. That's not unreasonable, except it turns out that as we try to investigate that, looking for bits of matter that had different colors, we discovered that that's wrong. There is no such distinction when we go looking for it. Okay, so are we clear about this distinction? I hope so. Yes, Corey?
No.
Oh, I see. You're just thumbs up? Okay, wow. Well, that's comforting. I hope it's true. Now, if Locke is successful, we now have a perfectly good tool for conducting natural science. It tells us which kinds of properties scientists should go looking for, and where they can't find them because there are only these other kinds, secondary qualities, right? Texture, color, taste, flavor, etc. Those kinds of, when we see those kinds of properties, we encounter those ideas of sensation, we know that those can't be. Those are the things to be explained. Those aren't the things that will do the explaining. And now we can go looking for what kind of things with primary qualities only would account for color vision. Black and white vision. Sweetness, sour, hot, cold, right? There's objective heat, right? Which has to do with mean kinetic energy, last time I checked. Something like that. But Subjective heat, you know, is that thing you're going for when you're about to take a shower and you're fiddling with the dial. In my case, trying to figure out how it really works, because, you know, I've never understood single dials. You know, I need two. A little for hot, a little for cold. But what you're getting, what you're trying to achieve is a comfortable subjective experience of heat. You're not trying to dial it to 82 degrees. It may be 82 degrees where it's comfortable. I can tell you as a swimmer, 82 is not comfortable. It's a little cool and it's good for long distance swimming. 87 is when it starts to feel like swimming in a bathtub. Okay? But I only know that because I've looked at thermometers. I used to manage pools, and so I kind of know the relationship between subjective felt temperature and objective temperature. And what science needs to provide us is an account of objective properties that cause all these subjective, these ideas of secondary qualities. All of that is not real. It's real as an effect in me, but in the world, it's something different. And in fact, Locke says everything in the real world that can cause any sensations in me is ultimately a primary quality. It's just that, and that's why I define quality differently, because what he really means is not that everything that's really out there is a primary quality, because that would be to defeat his own definition of quality. If a secondary quality is a quality that produces an idea in me that doesn't resemble the thing in the object, then it would be a mistake to say that what's really out there in the object is a primary quality. It can't be, John, because that quality produced ideas that don't resemble it. And you said those are secondary qualities. So make up your mind. There are either two kinds of qualities or there aren't. And this is very hard to keep track of. So many of you are going to be inclined, if asked, to suggest that all there really is in the world are primary qualities. And while that sounds right, it's wrong. Because Locke defines a whole two other kinds of qualities. And the one that matters most are the secondary qualities. And those are the powers in real objects in the world to produce ideas that fail to resemble those features of the object that have this power. That's why you have to distinguish between the feature of an object which is a power to produce an idea. And that's shared both by primary and secondary qualities. They're identical in having this power. Okay? So if you want to know what's really in the object vis-a-vis qualities, it's qualities of two kinds. They're both equally real. What is not real is your belief that there are features in the object that correspond to your ideas that are caused by secondary qualities in the object. Those qualities, we will discover, are really ultimately explicable in terms of primary qualities, that is, shape, figure, number, motion, and rest. Yeah.
So, would a secondary quality be more of like a subjective thing? Because like, I kind of am thinking of it as like this object like reminds me of something, and
yes,
is like kind of taking me to a different mental place than like what is actually like.
Yes.
What the object is?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so yes, but here is the fly in the ointment. Ideas of primary qualities are equally subjective in a sense, because they're all ideas, and ideas are mental states. Uh-huh. They're things before a conscious mind when it thinks.
Yeah, because we...
So what, but you're using subjective in this way that, well, it's that way for me, from the first-person perspective, you know, in Cartesian space, where I'm just stuck here in my little solipsistic world, attending to what is before my consciousness. Yes, there's, and you're thinking of those, you're thinking of that specifically in the case of consciousness of ideas that don't represent the way the things are in the world. Now it's just about things going on in here, and they're not representing the way things are out there correctly. But ideas of primary qualities are no different, except that they do represent the way things are out there. So we have to separate whether an idea corresponds to the way things are in the world from the view that an idea is subjective.
We have to have two kinds of ideas, right? But we can't really use the subjective-objective distinction the way that you want to, because even ideas that I have which represent the way the world is and therefore seem to be objective are nonetheless mental states, and so are subjective in this other sense. So it's a kind of, it's just a concept that is less useful. But you can see how hard one has to work if you're not going to use these common sense words, which unfortunately aren't precise enough to capture what Locke has in mind. So when I ask you to distinguish on the exam between ideas of primary qualities and ideas of secondary qualities, it will not be satisfactory if you list me a bunch of things that are ideas of secondary qualities, and then in another list another bunch of things as ideas of primary qualities, because that won't show me that you understand the way Locke made this distinction. Some of you are going to say that the ideas of secondary qualities point to things that aren't real. Don't make that mistake. They're caused by things that actually exist. They just exist differently than the qualities of the sensations would suggest. When you feel a pain, there's something wrong here, but no doctor can go to the pain thing and remove it. They have to go to something else that causes pain, but is not itself pain. Pain is the way we experience certain states of our body. Right? In other words, if you have a headache, you often feel discomfort. But the cause is not discomfort. The cause is, depending on the kind of headache, it's either your blood vessels are sort of too loose, you know, they're not tight enough, or they're too tight. Either they're opening up and relaxing too much, or they're tightening up too much, yeah.
So the color red of that pen exists. It just doesn't exist.
The cause of the color exists, and it's a complex of causes. And all of those exist, and every one of them can only be described using primary qualities, according to Locke. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the cause of the pain exists, also the pain exists too, right?
Well, the pain exists in your consciousness. That's the effect in you. Pain is a subjective state. It has a physical representation in your body, but unless you're confused about the difference between your mental states and your body, your mind and your brain, unless you've made the mistake of thinking they're the same thing, that's an ontological, metaphysical claim. It isn't actually established on the basis of experience. Your brain isn't experiencing anything. You are experiencing. We have to be very careful because it's easy to suppose that all sorts of mental states are actually caused by physical phenomena, but that doesn't make them the same thing. A mind-brain identity theory has to explain how physical becomes mental, has to explain how these properties that don't, there's nothing sweet in the world, okay? The world absent a world with perceiving beings has nothing sweet in it. It takes a while to get used to realizing that much that we take to be just a part of that array of truly actual things in the world. I'm not saying your experience isn't real, but there's a problem with the fact that your experience has something qualitatively different that things that exist without consciousness don't have. And we can't erase that difference simply by force of, force. We can't just say minds and brains are the same thing, so a pain is just a physical state of my body. Because a thermostat has a physical state, but it doesn't have a mental state that goes with it. When you read the thermostat is when a mental state is introduced, right? I mean, you don't think the thermostats are measuring anything, right? They're not aware of the, they don't have felt temperature, do they? I hope these thought experimental examples are helping you to see how Locke thinks of this distinction.
And it really is different from what all you scientific realists out there, like me, tend to assume by common sense. If it were that easy, that assumption actually comes at a cost, and it's mostly unpaid so far. I told you that the mind-body problem is a problem for Descartes, and it's a problem for everyone else. Because it's so far a mystery why there is any consciousness in the world at all. That's, some people call that, in philosophy, call that the hard problem. Why wouldn't it just be better to have a computer that directs my body, you know, and it would be a mechanical device, just like, you know, my laptop here, right? And it just, and it's just running calculations with software, right? I don't need mental states to make sense of this at all. So why introduce anything like that through evolution if, in fact, computers are faster, right? They're more reliable, right? They catch more data more quickly, and so on. So the idea that the brain is just another kind of computer is also a hazardous claim, and to against which there are multiple counterexamples. It's not so easy to make the case that human mind is just a kind of computer. That is the dream of AI, strong AI. But so far, it's still just a dream. And there are the people who believe in the dream, and you can go read them in Wired anytime you like. And then there are those that are more skeptical about that. They also write in Wired, and you can read about that. Okay, enough of this. So I hope this is clear, but if there are any continuing questions, we should resolve them, because so much turns on what we, on you understanding what I've been trying to help you to understand about ideas of primary and secondary qualities versus primary and secondary qualities as such. Yeah, Matt, and then.
Just making sure I have this right. Since simple qualities depend on sensory beings, the world absent perceiving beings.
No qualities depend on perceiving beings.
Okay.
Only ideas depend on perceiving beings.
Thank you. Okay.
So that's one of the distinctions I'm trying to make sure that you get. Qualities are things out there that have the power to produce ideas in creatures like us. Ideas are states of mind, and those presuppose a perceiving conscious being capable of thought, perception, etc.
So a world absent perceiving beings would still...
would have PQs and SQs, but... Well, except that what Locke would say is... Oh, actually, here's what Locke would say. Does a world that doesn't have perceiving beings have two kinds of qualities? No. That's why I'm trying to get you to see that the distinction between the two kinds of qualities ultimately is nothing more than a distinction that turns on effects of each and a difference in the way those effects represent accurately or fail to represent accurately the thing that causes them. And in a world without any perceiving beings, there are just primary qualities.
Okay. Thank you.
So those, they are the only ones that are real. But for us, who use real to mean actual, when you go to Ripple, you'll actually get to taste things. And they will be caused by primary qualities. Those tastes will be caused by primary qualities. But those sensations will not be sensations of primary qualities. Which is why you go there and pay good money. Because you don't pay money for shapes assembled in a certain geometric arrangement, right? Right? That, you know, which are either moving around or standing still for you. I mean, that would be like an installation, right? It'd be like, imagine you became a little tiny creature that could just walk around the molecules. I mean, you could imagine a museum for a creature like that, that might be at a place like Ripple, they would have unique chemicals in there, and they'd be walking around looking at the installation. And then it would be like going to a sculpture garden. Right? But we're not able to... This is, by the way, not such a crazy idea, and Locke actually has this thought, that if we had microscopes for eyes, we would see what's really there. So he partly explains why it is that we have ideas of secondary qualities, as based on, you might say, a certain lack of resolution or acuity for some of our sensory capacities. Vision's pretty good, but it's not good enough. If we had really high resolution vision, color would drop out. We'd just see all these things vibrating at different frequencies. It'd be like watching, you know, Michael Jordan dribble versus me dribble. That I would be the slow one, where the ball's moving very slowly, and then Michael would be the fast one. Well, I don't know how he dribbles now. But, yeah.
So I'm kind of thinking of primary qualities as being like related to sensation, and then some secondary qualities as like being related to reflection. Is that?
No, they're both of them actual sensations.
Okay.
I really do taste. I mean, if I'm not getting the actual sensations, I'm not paying for the chocolate sherbet. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to do it.
So, what's like a good example of a secondary quality? I think I'm not really.
That pink sherbet, that fake color. That's when they don't mix the mango right, and it looks pink. Okay. That help?
I don't know. I'm just still thinking of colors as like primary.
Well, that's a mistake. Because photons don't have colors. Every photon is the same. So, why do I see some colors and not others? It's photons everywhere, isn't it? Color is a reflective power of this shirt. You're not seeing the vibrations that are blue because they're being absorbed. Those photons are being absorbed, so you're not both seeing them. But if you were seeing them, the photons themselves would not be blue. They would look just like the photons you are seeing. Does this help? Well, it's important, but we're going to have to move on. So, there's a problem that emerges. Oh, I told you I'd tell you what the other kind is. Tertiary qualities. Tertiary qualities are the power of an object to produce a change in another object. So it's about causal relations between objects of perception. Like my stove produces heat in the water that I boil to make oatmeal. And the boiling of the water is a tertiary primary quality. Okay? It's an effect generated by the stove. I mean, sorry, the stove's heat, the heat that the element produces is a tertiary quality. And what it produces is an effect in some other object in the world of my perceptions, or not. But since those we're not so interested in, we're interested in which of our ideas correspond to the way things are in the world and which aren't. Yeah.
Well, to follow that, would it be like for primary versus secondary, like the molecular structure of the food would be primary and then the way that it tastes would be secondary?
Yes. Yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Absolutely. Sure. Just as pain is a certain, pain does, ultimately there's a causal chain running out our nerves to a receptor. And there's something happening at that receptor. It can be described. I mean, people who produce pain meds know about those receptors and know how to manipulate them so that the pain goes away by changing their state, right? Just as if you have a brain that's prone to depression, if you take antidepressants that actually increase the amount of serotonin or you know, that is on balance with what's the other chemical? Serotonin and dopamine, and it's when you have too little serotonin in some people that produces a tendency toward depression. So you have a selective reuptake inhibitor, which prevents the serotonin from being cycled back in as it normally is, retaken back up and modified through a chemical process, so that you have less serotonin. So it slows down the process of removing serotonin from the system. And that helps you to avoid depression. The depression is a secondary quality. The serotonin is a primary quality.
So you're calling pain a secondary quality?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because it's useless to go finding the pain thing, right? Like in the pain center. They talk that way, but it's just a place where pain, you know, is the part of the brain that responds to make that subjective experience possible, right? But in the article about how it functions, you'll never see pain mentioned as a property of it any more than this gray matter is conscious, right? And if you have a brain surgeon that says things like that, you need to say, wait up now. You know what you're doing when you open my skull, but you are making a conceptual mistake here. And maybe that'll make you feel like you haven't been, you know, you've resisted the tendency to treat the doctor like a god. Okay, now there are two problems that emerge for this distinction, now that I've explained it in great detail, overly detailed explanation. Now I want to point out that Locke has a problem. Because Locke thinks, and he says in a number of places, that simple ideas of sensation are ideas in me. They're effects in me. They're not in the object. They are themselves not qualities. They are ideas of qualities. They are effects of causes. And the causes lie out there in the world, and I only interact with them through sensations. And that means that neither the ideas of primary qualities nor those of secondary qualities are delivering to me the actual quality. Ideas of primary qualities resemble the thing in the object that causes them, but they aren't identical to it. So he is, as I've said before, an indirect realist. Mental content is in the mind. Perceptual content is something before the mind, which is all we have immediate access to. We don't have access to the chair. I have access to things in my sensorium that are caused by the chair, and some of them resemble what is really out there, but I don't actually perceive what's really out there. I only perceive ideas of primary qualities and ideas of secondary qualities. So, how can he justify this distinction if the basis for the distinction lies in a resemblance between ideas of primary qualities and the things and the object that cause them? So there's the visual and tactile shape of the chair as I perceive it, but then there's the actual shape of the chair, which I don't have direct access to. I only get shape in two different senses, right? And neither of them is the chair's shape. The visual and tactile shape, suitably abstracted, can represent the shape accurately. But the object is something I'm only making inferences about from what I perceive, and what I perceive are sensations. And unless you think that chairs are sensations, you should see why it can't be the case for Locke that he is immediately and directly aware of the primary qualities of the things that he encounters in his environment. Because if that were true, then all you would do is only attend to those, and then this distinction would be okay. But the problem is the distinction turns on an assumption that what I have immediate access to are the ideas, and it's the resemblance between the ideas and the thing that isn't an idea which makes ideas of primary qualities different from ideas of secondary qualities, which are effects in the ideas in me, which don't resemble the thing in the object that causes them. Now, in order to justify that distinction, wouldn't you say somebody's got to have access to the thing out there that's causing these ideas? Otherwise, how do you know that this idea represents what's really out there and this other idea doesn't? So the idea of color, they're both equally ideas. The color idea doesn't represent what's out there correctly. But the idea of shape does represent something that's out there accurately. But that distinction requires that I have access to what's really out there that's direct. But Locke says that all we have access to are ideas. So this challenge is called, it's a problem, and I call it Barclay's problem. How can you tell the primary qualities from secondary qualities if you never get to look past the veil of perception to see what's really out there? It's not enough that he says that what's really out there resembles the ideas of primary qualities. He needs to pay for that. That's a ticket that he can't, that's a check he can't cash. Because he's an indirect realist. And then there's an even worse problem that emerges from this if you think about it. If I can't tell which of my ideas resemble their causes in the object, and which of my ideas of sensation, anyway, fail to resemble their causes, then how do I know that any of my ideas resemble anything out there? Right? And that's, I call that Plato's problem. I picked Plato because Plato is the one who seems to have thought that the way that concrete things appear to perception, even when it sort of coincides with the way things are out there in the world, is nonetheless wrong. Perception is just, as Leibniz said, both Leibniz and Plato see it similarly, reality and confused representation. And we need to clear our heads. And the best way to do that is to stop looking, stop touching, stop tasting. Just sit in your armchair and think about the forms or monads, whatever your preferred reality that is derived through a process of reasoning alone, using only ideas that don't come from sense perception. Okay? Now, with this information in mind, we can now start to look at Locke's view of two concepts without which you couldn't conduct the science of nature. One is lowercase s substance, which is just his idea of an individual object. I have the idea of that individual object. It's a complex idea comprised of a bunch of simple ideas of sensation. And he calls that an individual substance, lowercase s. Remember, we can produce ideas by combining ideas we already have, and we have a bunch of simple ideas, and we can construct the idea of that chair that way. But there's another idea which has widely been used in the Western tradition to account for, among other things, the identity of that chair. And this I refer to with a capital S, and it's what Locke means by a substrate, something in which the properties of the chair reside, and which, along with those properties, comprises the identity of that chair, such that it's different from that chair, and that chair, and that chair, even chairs that all look the same. And we'll talk about that next time, because there's a problem about whether we can know that kind of substance. Locke says we can know nothing about it. We'll talk about that next time. Okay? All right.
Hello.
Hey.
I got the email, but I wanted to check in person. The due date has been moved to Monday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. That's right. And I'll tell everybody in class.
All right.
We have a chance. Okay.